Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's your week been?
Oh, well, fine. Okay. I don't know. Uneventful, I guess.
All right.
The days kind of blend together now.
There's a lot of uneventful out there in a way.
Yeah.
In a way. In another way, there are many events out there, but in another way, there's also no events out there.
Right. It's the macro versus the micro level, right? It's like macro level, there's a lot going on. Micro level, day to day.
Nothing is happening.
Not much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, here at home, recording podcasts, writing stuff.
iPad 10th anniversary.
I know. It kind of blew my mind because I was thinking about
cheating,
because
in January it was also the 10th anniversary. It was announced then, but it shipped 10 years ago today.
Well, it's like the Queen. You know, she gets two birthdays.
Okay. Great. It's like the Queen.
She has her actual birthday, and then there's like, you know, like an official Queen's birthday.
Mm.
Yeah. So she gets a... That's great. Twice as much cake, I assume, or whatever gluten-free treats you want. I remember... It was funny because I remember waiting for delivery of my iPad because it was the same time I was moving into this current apartment. And so I didn't have anything in the apartment, but I had it delivered to this address for some reason. I don't remember why. I don't think I had fully moved out of my old apartment yet.
But maybe I remember you assumed that it would ship here to your new place.
Yeah.
And then you weren't.
Yeah. So I remember sitting on the porch waiting for it to show up. It was a nice day in April, and I had nothing in my apartment. But I also meant I've been in this apartment for 10 years now, which was kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I can't quite come. This is the longest I've lived any place that wasn't my parents' house.
Huh.
By far.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, my house. We both came to this realization that we've lived in this house longer than we lived in any place else by far. By far. And you think about like where you grew up and stuff like that. It's like, nope.
Yeah. Right. No, I had two more stints at my parents' house after I, you know, left for college. So I feel like
you put in some extra time.
Sure. Yeah, I did some time, as it were.
You did your time. That's right.
So it's going to be a while before something else passes that, because, well, you know, that's like 20 years.
I wrote my last look back at the iPad for this cycle, call me again in 20 years, I guess, or 10 years or 15 years, I don't even know. But this was, I called up, so the Macworld still has my original iPad review up, which is fun. I think we rehabbed it in January, actually, and made sure that it was still functional and visible on the site so that we could... reference it, and I went through it, and it's funny. That was my Macworld column this week. What's funny about it is that it's all in there. Like, is this a computer or not? And what is it like with a keyboard? And what about the accessories? And like all that stuff was there on day one, because it's not shaped like the computers we use. And Federico Vitici over at Mac Stories goes into this in detail this week. He wrote a piece that he just posted today about how, you know, really the right way to think of the iPad is it's sort of this flexible computing device at the center of whatever setup you want. And he's taken that to an extreme, but I think he's right that that's sort of the appeal of it. But even on day one, it was sort of like, wow, this hardware is amazing. But it's weird. Like, it's not, what do I do? Apple's like, here's a keyboard dock that nobody wants to buy. And even on day one, I was like, you probably just want to use a Bluetooth keyboard if you're going to do that.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating, you know, because I was just looking back to find a piece I wrote around the same period. And I would love to tell you about it, but these malicious ads keep hijacking it. Thanks, Macworld. I wrote a piece called "The iPad Isn't a Third Device, But a Third Revolution," because that was the thing at the time. Was like, oh, it's the third device, right? You got a phone, you got a computer. Do you really need something else that's in between those things? And I think the with the benefit of 10 years hindsight, what I look back and say is, I do think it is a third revolution, but I think it's like, it's a slow one, right? Like,
sure,
it's a slow revolution of, like, you know, looking at the way people use their iPads today versus what they were trying to figure out what they were good for 10 years ago. Like, it turns out they are extremely valuable, extremely powerful devices, and they have supplanted a lot of our use of computers, but not entirely. And it's not like the revolution of the iPhone, which really felt much more like an overnight, like, this is totally different paradigm, right? Like, we went from having
yeah.
basically nothing. You know, some people had smartphones, but they were not at all like the smartphone, the iPhone was.
It also slid into an ecological niche, though, right? If you had a cell phone, the iPhone filled it, whereas the iPad's like
and
not...
more, right? Like...
Yeah, and more. Whereas the... But you could slide it in there and then have it do all this other stuff. Whereas the iPad's like, where does it slide in? It kind of doesn't slide in anywhere, even though it does a whole bunch of stuff.
Right. But it ends up being a thing that I think... Yeah, it's a weird. It's still weird. 10 years on, it's still weird, right? Because like, it's much more variable in its application than any of the other than the Macs or iPhones, right? Some people use it for a few things. Some people use it for a lot of things. Some people use it for most or all things.
Yeah,
but it really varies depending on the user, and that's fascinating, right? It didn't supplant the computer for everyone. It certainly hasn't like destroyed, you know, the Mac or laptops or whatever. But there are a lot of cases where people use it for a lot of the things that they used to use laptops for. And yeah, I don't know. It's more of a subtle revolution, I guess, because it really did change a lot of people's behaviors, but it didn't do it in a way that was universal across the board.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's why it can't be an iPhone, because it's too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
This week was my week of storage issues.
Storage issues.
It actually happened last Monday, so it's sort of 2 weeks of storage issues, the problem and the solution sort of in waves. But my Drobo 5D, my big disk that I have, that I use for all of my sort of storage, I have like terabytes and terabytes and terabytes on it, mm-hmm. Died on a week ago Monday during upgrade, or actually before upgrade, but the effects of it were found during upgrade, because for some reason Dropbox on that computer decided it was tired of looking at its disk not being available, and it decided to start interpreted as me deleting the files that were on my Dropbox, which I don't understand, but I was able to undo that after upgrade and get my files back on Dropbox. But my file, it turns out that was, then I go and I see, oh, this is why this is happening, is because my Drobo has died. Which is bad. Now, do I have it backed up? Yes, I do. Many terabytes, 7+ terabytes of it via Backblaze.
Lots of,
what I'm saying is it was huge. So
right. Yeah.
Then I have to do, I do a bunch of things. First thing is I go to Backblaze and say, can you send me, they have this yeah. thing where they send you a hard drive. Can you send me a hard drive with my backup in it? And they say, sure. But it's so huge that it takes them like 4 days or 5 days to get, it's like processing to like really literally to get the drive on. And also I have this question of like, how's this going to even work? Are there people working at Backblaze? Are they mm-hmm. like, are they at home? Do they have, I don't even know how that works, but it did ultimately ship to me and I got it the other day, which was great, because that was all my essential stuff. I also had a bunch of non-essential stuff that I can replicate, like movies and TV shows and stuff, but it's going to be hundreds of hours of work to re-rip them if I want them again. And I go through with Drobo. I'm like, I know this is a very old disk, but can you tell me what I need to do? And is there any way to pull the stuff off of it? And I get a support ticket where they're like, well, there is a read-only mode. Let's put it in there. You can use these diagnostics. And I send them the diagnostics. And the guy was very nice to respond, because it's a very old system and I don't think he needed to. And he basically says, yeah, the good news is I think your discs are fine. The bad news is your hardware is bad. Your Drobo hardware has died. Something has gone wrong. So what you need to do is get another Drobo 5D and put the discs in, and you should be able to get your stuff off. I'm like, okay. How do I do that? And he's like, I don't know. We don't have any. Great. eBay had one. Mm-hmm. eBay actually had two, one for half the price, and I put in a bid for about 3/4 of the price of the other one, and then somebody surpassed me, and I thought, you know, there's a buy it now for a price that I'm willing to pay from an online store that accepts returns, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just buy it and use it and return it, and
right,
pay the shipping and pay the return fee, and which is that happened. I got it. The disks went in. They worked. I copied the rest of the files off. Yeah, and forgive me if you guys listen to Upgrade, dear listener, because you may hear this story again. But this is the original telling of the story. So that's great. I got my files back. And I'm going to return that Drobo to the people who sold it to me. And in filling out the return request, I said, I actually have a broken Drobo with all the parts and the power cables and stuff. Do you want that too? I could just send that to you. You can have that. Like, I don't want to rip them off, but I don't want to keep this Drobo. Because I have a new thing. And that's the other part of this, which is I bought a RAID. I bought an OWC 4-disc, RAID enclosure, Thunder Bay, I think they call it. That's a reference to a city in Ontario or Saskatchewan. Where is
Canada?
It's in Canada. It's just up above the Great Lakes, and it's where Paul Schaefer is from. Where is Thunder Bay?
Google. Where is Thunder Bay?
It is Ontario. It is extreme
Ontario.
Well, it's extreme Western Ontario. I think of Thunder Bay as being Midwestern because it's like next to Minnesota and Wisconsin, and well, it's next to Wisconsin and above the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but it's still in Ontario. So Thunder Bay, Ontario, it's where Paul Schaefer's from. Anyway, Thunder Bay, the disc is a 4-disc enclosure, but they make the disc so huge now that even though I went from 5 to 4, I actually have more storage on my server. So anyway, mm-hmm. I got those, and I had a couple of discs, and I bought a couple of big hard drives, and all of that stuff also came, and it's using SoftRAID, which is a Mac app that does RAID, and I set it up as a RAID 5, which is redundancy. Mm-hmm. So one of the disks dies, you don't lose any data, which is also what the Drobo was supposed to do, which it did until it died. I still didn't actually lose the data. I lost the hardware that ran the drives, which is hilarious and not great. So I'm now, as of this morning, I have all of my files back. Which means, yes, the Backblaze disk was redundant, but I was happy to it. Also, there's another part of this, which is that I have this folder that I keep all of my like projects in process. And I was sitting here thinking, oh my God, all my projects that are in process didn't get time to back up over the internet by a Backblaze, and I've lost them. And it turns out I would have gotten them back eventually off of that Drobo. But right. I thought, this is a hole in my backup strategy. And then I remembered, wait a second, don't I have a second backup running? And I do. I had Arc, the backup app, backing up to my extra Dropbox space. And it was backing up the works in progress folder, and it was all there.
Nice.
So I got that back immediately because it was just on my Dropbox and I could restore. So what I'm saying is, back up your stuff. And then what I'm going to do is, I'm actually going to take some of those drives that were in the Drobo, and I'm going to put them in a different enclosure, and I'm going to back up all of my media to that. So that in addition to having Backblaze have my first set of like the stuff that I talked about that I absolutely have to have backed up, the non-essential stuff, I'm going to back it up just locally. Because again, it's not like 100% irreplaceable if I lose it, but it's really inconvenient. This was the, you know, what happens if your big drive dies completely? And it did. And I got out of it.
That was like me last year with my Mac Mini, trying to figure out what was going on with that after it died. And it turned out to also be like, the drives are fine. It's just the hardware. The Mini died.
Yeah.
And then eventually moving to the Synology, which I've been very happy with.
Yeah, people ask me about that, and what I said was I wanted to keep my Mac Mini as a server, and I didn't want to set up a NAS.
Yeah, if the Mac Mini had not been the thing that died for me, the problem was replacing that, getting a new Mini plus, some sort of external hard drive enclosure that provided that level of backup, plus the drives to go in there, was going to be way more expensive than the Synology for what I needed. Like, and at the end of the day, the Mac Mini is a great server, and I like it for that, but it's also, for what I use it for, it's a little bit of overkill. I mean, the Synology is too, to a certain extent. But, you know, having that and then having a big honking disk, you know, hanging off of it, I just don't have a good place to put any of that because it all lives in my entertainment center. And I was like, I don't want another four disc, you know, drive thing here. Totally. Plus the mini, all that. So I liked the mini. I was perfectly happy with it. And if it kept chugging along, I would have kept using it.
NAS stuff is consumer, essentially. NAS stuff now is so good that I think for most people that's the right thing. But for me, I've always had a Mac mini server since I've had a server in my house since the Beige G3, I want to say, or maybe it was I think it was a Beige G3 that I got like used at Mac User or Mac World, I guess Mac World at that point, just in a sale. It was like $75. And I was like, yeah, okay. And that was my server. And I've had one since then.
Yeah. There are advantages, certainly. Like when I was doing all my file comparison stuff, which I wrote about, the biggest issue I ran into was doing file compares. And because of the file system differences between Synology and the, you know, HFS Plus, essentially, which is probably what those were on.
Yeah.
There are different, like, legal characters you can have. And so when I copied stuff over the Synology, everything it encountered that had slashes in the name, it was like, no, that's not going to happen. And it just automatically... It does this thing that you'll see oftentimes in DOS, too, where it just sort of truncates or automatically renames stuff. And the problem is it renames stuff, you know, it's trying to generate a unique character, a unique name for something so that it doesn't have a collision with anything else on that drive, right? And it can only be so smart about it, so it actually just ends up with, like, essentially random characters in the name. It's like, great. Well, if I ever need to find something in here, that's going to be a super pain in the ass, but... Yeah. It's not, most of it is stuff that's so old because I don't put slashes in names anymore that it doesn't really matter. Like they're really old documents, like Claris work documents. I probably don't even have an app to open anyways. Like I have to go dig it in a hex editor anyways if I want to get anything useful out of it. So I'm not super broken up about that. It was more of just this is a super pain when actually trying to figure out whether I have that file or not. So there are, certainly, like, that is a problem I wouldn't have run into if I had stayed on the Mac Mini.
Right.
But, you know, trade-offs.
I used that app, actually, to detect differences, because I wanted to make sure before I wiped out my disks that I had gotten everything over. And there were a few things that didn't back up, because Backblaze doesn't back them up, like disk images and, like, my VMware disk images and stuff, ISOs, my old Mac OS stuff wasn't backed up either. Mm-hmm. Which is an oversight. I need to do something about that and have that backup somewhere else or remove that as a setting. So I found those and I copied those over. It was mostly just that kind of stuff. It was nothing big. But it's nerve-wracking because you eventually, unless you keep all your old disks around forever, you have that moment where, and if you do, then you end up with the moment that you have, which is now I need to wipe them and how do I do it many years later. But you worry about like, well, what if there's a file in here I missed that I know I'm going to need later? Yeah. I want to keep that around. And it's like, well, at some point you're like, I can't. Right. I can't do that.
The point is, at some point you realize, well, if I haven't needed it in the last decade,
and that's the argument to keep it around.
It's gone. Yeah,
but like I'm not going to keep a Drobo around with disks in it just in case I need to. Right, like I'm not going to do that. So at some point, you have to, you have to figure it out. You have to make that decision.
I feel great about having really reduced the number of drives that I have. You know, here that actually I feel like, because they were always lurking, like you'd have that stack, you're like, oh god, someday. And it feels great to like cross that off the list and be like, you know what, those are all done, I wiped them all, we're good. I have like one backup drive now that has like an old image of the mini right before it died, so it's like if I ever need to refer back to anything or just verify stuff, at least I have that.
So
I got
at the some
Synology
point, at some point I bought a kit that is, I think, USB two, and it's this brick and it has a whole bunch of different cables on it.
Yeah, like ID and a SATA and all that stuff.
And so you can just plug in a bare drive mount
that's
it.
That's what I did. That's what I was doing all week.
And that I wiped a bunch of stuff there, and I think most of the drives I have now are in enclosures.
Yeah. Right. So I have two. I have one that accommodates old IDE or the mini laptop IDE or SATA. And then I have one of those like toaster ones where you just plunk the drive in. And
speaking of SATA, and you didn't know I was going to go there, but I was watching. No. So Quinn Nelson did this great video this week that I linked to on the site, which is him modding his Mac Pro, and like the big thing is he used a circular saw to cut the thing off the bottom of it, so you can lift it off without unplugging all the cables, which is brilliant. But he did a bunch of other stuff too, and it's actually there's a lot of insight into sort of how this thing works, and it's very smart. He's a smart guy. But the thing that I couldn't get over is he kept calling it SATA. And I was like, yeah. Like Satan? No, that's not how you say SATA. You sat down on a SATA drive. You visit Satan for a SATA drive. That's not right. And then I realized, why do I think that? And the answer is because in absence of pronunciation, you just have to make something up. He said, looking at his folder of GIFs, right? Like you just make something up. And then it turns out everyone else made up a different thing. Right. And
it's SATA. Funny too, because that grew out of the old interface was the IDE/ATA, both right. of which I would pronounce as IDE/ATA
and
not IDE or ATA.
Right. Only so, SCSI yeah. was given a name because it's hilarious to call SCSI SCSI, right?
Yeah, we could have been living in a world where we plug things into our USB ports, but
yeah,
well, probably also, for the best that we're not.
Actually, I want to applaud the people in the 80s for good job people in the 80s for taking SCSI and not trying to popularize it as the sexy port. Thank you. Thank you. Because it was not. It was a SCSI port, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'd be great because like the stuff we're using today is literally unpronounceable. How do you pronounce USB-C? USBS. The USBS
yeah.
port.
Yeah, it's just USB-C. It's fine. It's fine. I was just looking. I have an M-SATA thing now.
Yeah.
Or is it M-SATA? Could it be Satan? Whoa. That's hey, the SATA. 80s people got that reference. the... MSATA, which I'm going to put in a little tiny enclosure because I have a 256 MSATA little chip that it's I could use that. I could use that as a backup for my boot drive on my Mac Mini, in fact. So I'm going to put it in a little tiny USB-C enclosure and stick it on the back.
Is the MSATA is the one that goes in like laptops, right?
Yeah, it's teeny tiny, right?
Yeah,
and the Drobo used it as an accelerator cache, and I don't have the Drobo anymore. So
I actually have an old one of those I pulled out of my old MacBook Air. And I thought that is still lingering where it's like, I need a way to wipe this. I know you can buy a cable, which I'll probably have to do eventually. But
yeah, or you could just smash it with a hammer.
That is probably the other option.
It's very small, Dan. It's very small.
Run it to the shredder. I was going to say the best move I made was taking... So when I was trying to fix the Mini, one of the purchases I made because I was trying to get rid of that whole... it was running a Fusion Drive. And I was like, oh, this is a pain. And so I was like, you know what? Just buy an SSD that's large enough that I can just dump everything on it. So I bought a 2 terabyte SSD, and that was literally sitting in the dead Mac Mini, not doing anything.
Wow.
And I was sitting there one day thinking, oh man, you know what's so frustrating is I keep running up against the limit on my Xbox when I try to download games. I have to like clean stuff off and download new games. I was like, wait a second, I got a 2 terabyte SSD just sitting around. So I slapped it in an enclosure, and because the Xbox handles external storage, plugged it into the Xbox, and now I never have to worry about running out of storage on my Xbox ever again.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I feel great about that because it was so annoying where I'd be like, oh, there's this new game that came out. I kind of want to try it, but it's 100 gigabytes, and how am I going to clean that much space off without deleting these old games that I might want to go back and play? And it was like, it wasn't a lot of games on my Xbox. There's maybe 10. And I was just like, constantly running up against that 500 terabyte limit or whatever.
Right.
It's like, or 500 gigabyte limit. 500 gigabyte. It was not very big.
500, half a petabyte.
Half a terabyte. And I was like, whatever. I don't know. Anyways, it was like 2 terabytes. I'll
SATA,
add it in.
As long as you were not compelled by SATA.
Mm. SATA, the power of SATA does not compel me to do this.
SATA N. It's a special kind of evil drive.
It's the worst kind.
SATA. It's just you sat on it.
Worst kind.
Because there's parallel ATA too, which was PATA.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
SATA and PATA.
What was the great was the... when I opened up the G3, the blue and white, I forgot. The drives were disconnected, first of all. I don't know why I did that, but like the ribbon cable was detached. But also,
take that.
It was, in fortunately deprecated terminology, a master slave configuration of those drives. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember when I had to do this all the time and set little jumper blocks and that.
Yeah,
like,
oh,
back
God.
When I worked IT, I had to spend so much time configuring that stuff, pulling drives in and out of computers. As you mentioned somewhere, I think in something that isn't, I don't remember if you mentioned this in a podcast or someplace you hadn't it hasn't been published yet, but like I spent a lot of time with my hands in the guts of computer getting them cut to shreds by all the stupid
that's
cases.
In a piece I haven't posted yet. But yeah, I have distinct memory. In fact, for a while, so we used to keep my wife's old Pentium 100 PC around that she had for work, and she stopped using it and just used a Mac. We got to the point where she didn't need to have the PC for the stuff that they were using for work anymore. But I kept it. And the reason I kept it is the way you expanded a TiVo was boot a PC into Linux and run this blessing software that would bless it would create a TiVo hard drive and you could stick it in any TiVo. And I became like Dr. TiVo. I would have people, literally, I'd have my friends bring me drives and I would bless them and give them back. And
it's had a legend of Dr. TiVo.
Dr. TiVo. That was me. I was Dr. TiVo. That was Phil Michaels came up with that. We're calling Dr. TiVo. Okay. So I kept it around just for that. And at one point in opening it to put in one of these drives, I totally slashed my hand.
Oh man.
And I bled everywhere. And then for the rest of the time we had that P100 PC on the beige top of that Gateway 2000 PC, there was just a line of blood. I kept it there. I was like, I hate you. He says, you know, I paid in blood for your stupid bended sheet metal, not polished or sanded or whatever you do so it doesn't cut everybody. Because they were cheapskates. Like, they made those PCs.
I'm having like the tactile memory of what those like chassis felt and remembering. It's so bad.
The sheet metal feel. I get that I took apart my washing machine when I was fixing it. It's the same thing, right? You get in there and it's like, no consumer is meant to see this. It's like going backstage at a theater or something where it's like, this is not the part that is nice.
Sharp and it's terrible. Like delving into some sort of lich's domain in the caverns.
Another thing that came up in that same thing that I haven't posted yet because it's a project I'm working on and I do a lot more of it before I start posting them is that's tantalizing for you, dear listener. Maybe, or maybe it's boring. I don't know. But Scuzzy, we talked about that earlier. I was reading this article about the introduction of FireWire.
Oh yeah.
And it's hilarious because I believe I edited it. It was a sidebar in an article introducing the Blue and White G3 in Macworld, and Henry Bortman wrote it, and I believe I was the editor on it. And it is, let's explain, and we did one about USB and then we did one about FireWire. And it's explaining it in contrast to SCSI. And it's just hilarious because it's things like you don't have to set device IDs. That was one that, like, I remember that there were terminators, right? That you had to put on a
daisy chaining device.
Terminator, and you daisy chain them and all that.
Set the little SCSI ID number on the back.
But you had the little wheel where you had to, like, set the SCSI ID because they were limited. There was, like, six or something IDs.
Six or seven, I think, yeah.
And so you had to pick one that didn't conflict, and then you could chain them and all this stuff. And it's just funny because the fact is that USB and FireWire both. That was a seminal point because that's how you connect stuff to this day. You just plug it in. You don't worry about it. But before them,
oh my god,
you didn't do that.
Not even little things like hot swappable, right? Like used to be, you want to like connect a SCSI drive while you're shutting down your computer.
Yes,
you're plugging it in. Yes. Then there's like, oftentimes there's like a power up order because like that was like one of the things like zapping your pram was the like. Is something wrong with your SCSI chain that is causing your computer to freak out?
It's because you didn't have the terminator seated properly in the last link in the SCSI chain. It's absolutely happened. Oh, by the way,
dumb.
I'm the guy who used to hot plug SCSI devices.
Oh, living on the edge.
I know. It was fine. It didn't bother me. But I'm sure it destroyed some people's lives, but I never got bitten by that. But yeah, it was ridiculous. So the point is that it's funny to read these articles that explain how there's this brave new world, and at the time it's like, oh my god, all these annoyances will go away. And now you read it and you're like, wait, you had to do what before this? Like it's just completely flipped, because this is now, I'm struck sometimes by, you look back at like iMac coverage from 97-98 explaining what USB is. It's like, you can literally still plug those things in today, like USB-A, even though USB-C is now pushing it out, like it's still USB. It still works. You can still plug in. You can plug in one of those stupid hockey puck iMac mice to your to my iMac Pro. I can plug it in. It works fine.
I can see one from where I'm sitting, yeah. Jason.
Yeah, on your blue and white G3.
Yeah. It's not actually connected, but it's in the box near it. I was going to... Yeah, like the FireWire, first of all, it was great. It was so good at the time because of like all those features. Like USB was fine, but FireWire, like because it was so fast,
yeah.
Like insanely fast. I was telling the story to my wife.
The argument was
that
USB replaced things, but people are like, yeah, but you need SCSI to do anything fast because USB 1 was really slow.
It's very slow.
And FireWire was not
two
slow.
2 megabits or something ridiculous. Yeah. The one file that was on there that I needed to off my G3 to retrieve was a video I made for my college anime club that was like a parody video at the end of my senior year. And it's like a 20-minute long video that I like. It's basically like clips from different shows edited together with some new like effects and titles and then all redubbed. And so I was like working my butt off to make this project. It was extremely difficult because like doing all of that in 2001/2002 was not easy. And I finished exporting it. I was using Premiere and the file was like 4 gigs. Now, circa 2002, 4 gigs was a lot of like a substantial chunk of my hard drive. And so I realized like I've got to get this file to the showing because we were going to show it live, like hooked up to the projector. And I was like, my PowerBook did not have a big enough drive to put a 4 gigabyte file on. And so I'm sitting there racking my brains, and storage was not as cheap in those days. You couldn't just go out and buy like a multi-gigabyte hard drive. And what I had this click was, wait, I do have an external hard drive that's big enough to fix that. I have my original iPod, which was still in active use at that point. So I literally wiped the entire iPod, which was just enough room for a 4 gigabyte file, took it to the showing, and then like plugged in my computer, plugged in the hard drive, the iPod, and like showed the whole thing off the iPod running over FireWire because it was just a FireWire connection. And I could not believe that. And I just went back and synced my music back later because that was the great part of it. It's like I have all the music. And I could not believe that that worked. And it was just a problem I feel like you would never have today.
Like, yeah,
I'm sure there's some corollary, but like it was, yeah, those were the days. It felt like everything you were doing kind of like on a shoestring, basically.
Yep. Yeah. And then you look back on it and you think, boy, that's not.
Boy, how far have we come?
It's so true.
Far. So far. Nowadays, you just can't figure out the right USB ports to plug things into.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
Nope. Nothing else unless, there was no iPhone SE today, which a lot of people thought there was going to be, but maybe Monday. I'm betting on Monday. I've got my conspiracy theory from Monday because I looked back at old Apple releases and at least a few of those mid-cycle iPhone releases were released on Mondays.
You don't put a product out on a Friday. That's bananas.
Friday, who's going to read out Friday?
You don't put up because everybody's getting ready, gearing up for their big weekend. Yeah, right. They'll do it early in the week if they do it. And the AirTags, too. Like,
I was going to say, AirTags keeps leaking. Maybe.
Also, these stories about the iPad Pro and does it have a U1 chip? I think I said this before here, but I'll say it again. I'm trying to not to make too big a deal about it because I don't want to emphasize it too much, but it doesn't have one. that's my answer. They're like, we're investigating. The iFixit teardown suggests it doesn't have one. I can't tell you how I know that, but it doesn't have one. I know it doesn't have one. That's just all I'm going to say. It doesn't have one, which means it's not going to get when AirTags finally ship, if they ever do. It's going to not have the precision of the iPhone will in terms of finding them, because it's not going to be able to use the ultra wideband. It'll just have to use the Bluetooth LE, which is not as good.
I think the SE will have it. It'd be weird to renounce, like, here's our new tags. You can use your iPhone, except this iPhone we are also releasing, which doesn't have
it. That's the thing, is the AirTags will work with other devices.
Right, just not as well.
But it won't be as precise. It'll be like, you're close, instead of it's right there. Because with ultra wideband, it'll know exactly where it is. And with Bluetooth LE, it's sort of like, it's near, right?
Is the U1 is the all of the 11s or just the Pro?
All
the 11s, okay.
All the 11s. And the funny thing about it not being on the spec sheet for the iPad Pro is that everybody can see Apple, like, they didn't even want to talk about it on the iPhone 11, but it was sort of too late because that product they thought would ship and it didn't ship or something. I don't know. It's very funny. A product that doesn't do anything except the weird AirDrop thing, but the iPad Pro doesn't do it at all because it doesn't have the chip in it. I think they maybe here's my theory. The iPhone 11, they built it with a U1 chip in and they couldn't take it out. It was like too late in the game, even though AirTags was not ready and got delayed. So they're like, all right, well, we're just going to ship it. We'll put that AirDrop feature in. Nobody will care. I think with the iPad Pro, iPad Pro was coming together when they knew that the AirTags were kind of up in the air. And I think my theory is that they're like, nah, like, let's not. It's an iPad. It's not as big a deal as the iPhone. And we, you know, fool me once, shame on me kind of thing. So they just left it out. But yeah, I wonder if the iPhone SE is coming, if maybe the AirTags will actually ship. Because they're leaking into security, like support documents and video. Screenshots. And yeah,
there's like a product video from like the Twitter account or something. Yeah. I don't know. That's bizarre.
Yeah, that had a thing about AirTags in it. So it's got to happen. It's just a matter of like,
yeah, between that and the SE thing leaking on the screen protector.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a third-party screen protector, but it's on Apple's website.
Apple site. Yeah.
Right. And they probably somebody didn't see it because it is the name. By the way, I win. What do I win? Nothing. But I win the prediction game.
That's the SE.
If it's the SE, because that was what I said, is that why are you going back two numbers to 9 and calling it an iPhone 9?
No,
iPhone SE
sense.
is a term that is out there. It doesn't mean anything. They already had one. It'll just be another iPhone SE. And the SE is just the brand for the old style phone that's cheap. And that's what it is. So if that truly is the name of it, then I'm gonna do a victory lap. And if it is the iPhone 9, then I will never mention it.
That's the way to do it.
That's how that works.
I also bet on Monday because of that Best Buy thing that was going around about the stocking, like where it was like, don't stock this until the 5th or something. I was like, yeah, well, that kind of makes sense, right? Because you close on the 5th, you stock it, and then in the morning, by the time you open, they've announced the new product.
Yeah.
So that's my money. I'm putting money down. I'm not putting any actual money down on it, but I'm putting...
You lay it a quarter on your desk.
Yeah. And if I win, I get that quarter back. And if I don't win, that quarter stays there forever.
Interesting.
Until my next bet.
All right. Well, everybody out there listening to this, stay safe. Stay healthy if you're healthy. Remain indoors when you can. Begin crafting your cloth mask to... conceal your identity and keep you and others around you healthy. My mother-in-law is a quilter. She's sending us masks.
Oh, that's nice.
She's an expert sewer.
I think I've got some old dust masks from, like, you know, working on projects.
Oh, that's nice.
Things. Also, I'll see if I can dig those out, but I cannot sew. So that's that one. The making my own might be a little dicey. We'll see. I should impose upon my quilting relatives and see if they'll...
That's a good idea.
Be nice and send me one.
Yeah, quilters or sewers will be important in the after times.
Yes, not like me, with no valuable skills.
So everybody out there, take care, and we'll be back next week, because where else are we going to go? But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.